You are listening to the Mid-Current Church Podcast. This week is the third week in our series, Begin Again, a study on the book of Deuteronomy. For more information and to visit us online, visit us at midcurrentchurch.org and find us on Facebook and Instagram. And now, here is Pastor Sten Carlson with today's message.
Most mornings, the very last thing that I say to my kids as they head out the door on their way to the bus stop is, here's what I say to them. I say, fly the dub. And that's our shorthand way of saying to each other, fly the W. Sometimes we even flash the W hand signal to each other. Now, as a raging fan of the Chicago Cubs, you might think that what we are doing is celebrating a recent home victory at Wrigley Field. See, when the Cubs win at home, they raise a white flag with a blue W on it high above the ballpark. And this tradition began in the 1930s as a way to initially signal to the neighborhood of a recent Cubs victory. They wanted the neighbors to know, and especially anyone riding on the elevated train, they call it the L. They wanted anyone riding through the neighborhood to see that the Cubs had won. Now it has just become like a popular rallying cry after any Cubs victory. They say, fly the W. Now, as excited as I am for a Cubs win, which they're in the playoffs this year, just in case anybody was curious about that. Okay, as excited as I am for any Cubs win, that's not what I'm referring to when I tell my kids to fly the W. Borrowing that phrase, because I am raising my kids right to be fans of the Chicago Cubs as well, but borrowing that phrase has just become an easy way for me to send a more important message to my kids. And so when I tell my kids on the way out to the bus stop, when I tell my kids, fly the W, if we flash the hand signal and say, fly the dub, right? They know that what I'm telling them to be is weird. Okay, that's what our W stands for. No joke. It's not win, it's weird. They know when I say fly the dub, they know I'm telling them, hey, go be weird today. At school, with your friends, wherever you go, they know I'm telling them, go be weird. Now, you might think that is very, you might think that's very questionable parenting advice, right? Because here's the deal. Kids and adults alike, nobody wants to be weird. Kids and adults alike, they avoid at all costs being weird. Okay, most people, they're horrified to think that someone would say that they are weird. Right? We don't want to dress weird. We don't want to talk weird. We don't want to have weird hobbies or like weird things. I remember when I was a kid, it seemed like there were certain foods that were embarrassing to eat at lunch in elementary school. Somehow you were weird. This is just what I remember. Somehow you were weird if you liked certain foods that were being served for hot lunch that day. I don't know who decided like what was okay and what wasn't, but somehow there were certain meals on the hot lunch menu that you didn't want to be caught eating. Was this the case for anyone else, or was just this? Okay, a couple of hands going up. Okay, whatever it is, nobody wants to be weird. And typically, this is all of us. We spend a lot of time, we spend a lot of money, we spend a lot of energy to avoid people thinking in any kind of way. We spend a lot of time and energy to avoid having other people think that we are even the slightest bit off from the norm. And I get that, right? In most ways, I am the very same way. But there is an argument to be made that being weird is good for you somewhere. There is a scenario in which being weird is actually the goal. It's actually the mark of success. There is an area of your life that you could say being weird is a sign that you are headed in the right direction. And that's what I want to try to help uncover for you today. Now, I'm not encouraging you or your kids or anyone else. I'm not encouraging you to like start dressing funny or to start eating gross food like beets or black olives or something like that. I'm not encouraging anybody to go around wearing like funny cheese-shaped hats on their heads at sporting events. That's not what I'm talking about. Sorry, don't send me your mean emails. If you're going to, my email address is jonathan@midcurrentchurch.org. Okay, that's not what I'm talking about today. But what I would like to do today is to try to help you understand why and how and where being weird is actually good for you and is actually something that you should be a whole lot more interested in. That is going to be the focus of this entire morning and this message in our series called Begin. Again, it is a series designed to identify some of the major themes in the Old Testament book of Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy, as I have been reminding you all month long, is just two Greek words smushed together, deutero, which ultimately means second, and nomos, which means law. So you put it together and you get Deuteronomy. And the name of this Old Testament book is a reference to the second time that Moses taught God's law and God's instruction to God's people. The first time was 40 years prior when Moses went up to the mountaintop and came back down with the stone tablets and God's commandments for his people. And at this point, God begins to lead his people on a journey through the wilderness toward the promised land, the land that he swore to them and to their ancestors. The problem is the people, God's people, are perpetually rebellious. And they turn their back on God and they turn away from his teaching and they turn away from his instructions for them. And as a result of their own rebellion and their own disobedience, their wandering through the wilderness lasts for, get this, 40 years. Meaning that an entire generation, ultimately it's this first generation that got the instructions and got the promise. Their disobedience and their rebellion meant that an entire generation was going to, you know, they were going to miss it. They were never going to get the chance to enter into the land that God promised them. Too much time had gone by. They weren't going to make it. So now fast forward to the time of the book of Deuteronomy. And here's what's happening. The next generation is on the doorstep of the promised land. And Moses delivers to them a big giant sermon or collection of sermons, really, which ultimately is the book of Deuteronomy. And the point of his big long message to them for a second time was to call them to faithfulness and to obedience to God's instruction for them as they begin kind of once again their final journey into the promised land. And here's what I believe. Here's why I think this is a timely message for us, or a timely series, because I believe that some of you here today, you're on the doorstep of something new that God is calling you to, or you might be ready to begin again some kind of new journey that you feel like God is maybe leading you on. There could be a whole host of things happening. You might have just had young kids, you know, and you're going, hey, you know what? We got to get ourselves back to church. We got to get ourselves to church maybe for the first time. You might have experienced some kind of loss in your life. And even in the midst of the pain, it has made you turn toward God for the first time, or for the first time in a long time. You might have had something happen in your life, good or bad, and you're thinking, maybe I need to begin pursuing God just a little bit more than I have so far. Or maybe the recent passing of Charlie Kirk has sparked something in you. Take all of the arguing that's happening right now out of the equation, and what we're seeing just as kind of real facts on the ground, what we're seeing, and I've had colleagues here in Hudson allude to the very same thing, what we're seeing is that many people, outside of all the arguing, many people are just, because of this stuff, they're returning to church or to faith or pursuing either of them for the first time again. Okay, whatever it is, it could be that some of this stuff, it could be something else. Whatever it is, I suspect that some of you are here today beginning for the first time, or maybe for a second, or maybe for a third time, you're beginning some kind of journey toward what it is that you think God might be calling you to. A journey towards what it is that you think God might have for you next. And if that's the case, then the question is, how do you pursue it all best? How do you pursue, you know, what God has in store for you? What exactly is required of you in order for you to experience the best of what God might have in store for you next? I think that that is ultimately what the book of Deuteronomy helps us to discover. And so far, I won't spend too much time in review. So far, we have learned that we have to, in order to take the next step forward, we have to, number one, look back. We have to remember that God's work in our past is going to help us to understand God's way forward in the future. And number two, we have to learn to love God. And what we learned last week is that love for God is ultimately our undivided loyalty to God. We don't just pick and choose, you know, kind of, you know, where we demonstrate allegiance to God. It's an all-out devotion in all things at all times. Okay, that's week number one and two. Look back, love God. Today, we're going to keep moving through the book of Deuteronomy in order to discover the next and the third of four pieces to the puzzle. Last week, we left off in Deuteronomy chapter 6, where Moses is urging his people to love the Lord your God. He says, all your heart, soul, your mind, and he gives some specifics about what that looked like. And that leads us then to chapter 7. And it begins, chapter 7 does, with Moses giving some very particular instructions about how God's people are supposed to conduct themselves in every new territory in which they find themselves on this journey, you know, toward the promised land. He gives some very strong and some very clear kind of do's and don'ts, and then he tells them why. Here's some specific things to do and to not do and to pay attention to, and here's why. It's verse 6. Moses says this to them. He says, "For you are a holy people who belong to the Lord your God. Of all the people on earth, the Lord your God has chosen you to be his own special treasure." So I want to stop here. Okay, what we're seeing, Moses tells his people, you are a what? A holy people. You're a holy people. So the question is, what does that mean? And also, what does that not mean? Our whole discussion today is actually going to hinge just on this one word, holy. And here's what's tough. Too often today, I think, because I kind of sit back and observe how people talk and act and interact with one another, too often I think the word holy today is misunderstood. Too often I think that people think that the word holy means better. Right? A lot of times today you'll hear someone accuse someone else of being holier than thou. You ever heard this before? You maybe like said this to someone before, right? It means someone is saying, hey, why are you acting like you're better than us? They say, hey, quit acting all holy. Quit acting holier than all the rest of us. Right? Somehow in the world today, holy has become synonymous with like being better. Don't act like you're better than all the rest of us. And for the majority of Christians, when this is the way that we all of a sudden just kind of think about the word holy, the phrase, the idea, for the majority of us as Christians, we go, hey, we know we're not necessarily better. We know we're not perfect people. We're just forgiven people. And so we don't want to act like we're better than anyone else. We don't want other people to think that we think that we're better than them. And so what we do is we just kind of zip our lips. Right? We just kind of fade into the background. We just decide, if this is what people think holy is all about, we're going, I don't want to be sending that message. So we just kind of blend into all the rest. We do our best version of like the Homer Simpson meme that's going around the internet right now. It's like, we just kind of like, Right? We don't want to draw. We're going, hey, I don't want to send the wrong message. I don't think I'm better than the people saying I'm better than them. Don't be holy. So we just try to like, we don't want to draw too much attention to ourselves. But here's the problem with all of this, okay? Holy, when Moses says, hey, you're a holy people, holy doesn't mean better. It's not some kind of like grade, right? Holy doesn't mean better. Holy just means set apart. Okay? We see Moses refer to the very same thing in Deuteronomy chapter 14, verse 2. He almost says the same thing. He says, you have been, he's talking to God's people, he says, you have been set apart as holy to the Lord your God. And he chose you from all the nations to be his own special treasure. In simplest terms, holy and set apart, it just means different. It just means distinct, right? Not better. Not better than you, not better than everybody else. Just different, just distinct, just set apart. And this is ultimately then the third piece to the puzzle, right? In order to step into the best of what God has for us next, we have to, number one, we look back. Number two, we love God. And here's number three, we got to live differently. Okay? Holy, it's not better. Moses said, hey, you're a holy people. It's not better. It's just differently. We have to learn to live differently. Moses says to God's people, you're a holy people. And that's why you do the things that God has asked you to do, okay? If you want a real technical definition of the word, that's it in simplest terms, right? Holy just means set apart. It just means different from all of the rest. If you want a technical definition of the word holy, here's what I can tell you. The word holy is the Hebrew word. It comes from the Hebrew word kadosh, which is ultimately like a word family that signifies that something belongs in the realm of the sacred. And then listen to this. It belongs in the realm of the sacred and is consequently distinct from the common and the profane. Okay? That's the word kadosh. It means that something belongs in the realm of the sacred and it is distinct from the common or the profane. Pay attention to that for just a second here. Distinct from the common and the profane. The profane, I would argue we understand. As Jesus followers and maybe for even those of us that are not yet Jesus followers, I think we understand the value in distancing ourselves from the profane, like from the real vulgar and from the real, you know, like nasty and irreverent and inappropriate and disrespectful. I think for the most part, we're all in agreement about that. Like that, the profane, that stuff is best to be avoided. But look at this. Okay, holy means distinct, not just from the profane, but even from the common. Even from just kind of the everyday, kind of neutral and normal standard that we see in the world. As people following after God's will and hoping to receive God's blessing, we're called to live a life that is set apart from and different from and distinct from and distinguished from even that which is kind of just considered to be normal. Here's what that says to me, that if you want to stand up for God, you are going to stick out in the world. That's what we have to understand. Right? You got to understand this, and to some degree, you need to be ready to embrace this idea, if not like pursue it intentionally. If you want to honor God, if you want to receive his blessings and the best of what he has intended for you, standing out appears to be the standard. Okay? Standing out is the indicator that you're doing it, that you're headed in the right direction. Standing out and sticking out in the world, it's not like a bad thing. It's not a warning that you did something wrong or that you took things too far or that you got a little carried away, right? It's the goal. Standing out for God's people, it is the standard. And there's actually a book that's about all of this. It was super influential early in my marriage with Erica. And it's written by a pastor named Craig Rochelle. The book is titled Weird. And the subtitle is this, When Normal Isn't Working. And the authors, this pastor, Craig Rochelle, his whole point is that we work so hard in life to not stick out. That's actually what I was alluding to kind of at the beginning of a message. We don't want to be weird. And generally speaking, we're satisfied and we're content and we're even, you know, relatively pleased with ourselves when we look to the left and we look to the right and we determine that, whew, our lives are pretty normal. You know, we're kind of just, you know, we're right there, you know, we're right in the thick of it. We're right there in the middle of the pack with everyone else. When we look at how we live and how we spend our time and the choices we make, we look around us and we think, well, good. Everything, you know, appears to be pretty normal. But he makes the case with some studies and statistics, which this was years ago. I would make the case that it's even more so today. But he makes the case that normal, even in Christian circles, he makes the case that normal today is often overscheduled, overwhelmed, overstressed, overworked, overindulged, oversexualized, overspent, overfinanced, overstimulated, overexposed, overintoxicated, and the list goes on and on and on. And when this is the case, he makes the point, he asks the question, why in the world would Jesus' followers have any interest in being normal? The whole book is kind of like newsflash. Normal isn't working. His encouragement is that we should be far more interested in being weird. And now you see where my encouragement comes from to my kids every morning when they get on the bus. It's this book, and it's more so this idea. For the sake of where God is leading us and for the sake of who God has called us to be, that we would be different, that we would live differently than the rest of the world around us, maybe even in such a way that they would think we are just a little bit strange. Being considered a holy people, we have to understand, it was not some kind of divine like assessment, some kind of grade stat. It was just a description. It wasn't like a grade that said you're better. It was just a description of the lives that God's people were intended to be living in each new foreign land in which they passed through, right? Because on their way to the promised land, they're going through new region, new territory, surrounded by different foreign groups of people. In being a distinct witness among all of the people, that was the goal. That was God's goal for them, that they would have a distinct witness, and a distinct witness was going to require a distinguished and a distinguishable way of living that was different from all the rest. It's the case for them, for us too. It come back to the same idea that we want to stand up for God. If we want to have a witness, if we want to stand up for God, we're going to have to stick out in the world. And I think embracing what God has for us next, it depends on how ready we are to live just a little bit differently. And that's what God, through Moses, instructs his people to do. If you're following along in the book of Deuteronomy, God has instructions for his people about how to live differently for roughly like chapters 12 through 25, which we can't go through all of them. And next week, as we bring the series to a close, we're actually going to kind of skip to the end of the book. But I would encourage you to read these chapters in between 12 through roughly 25. And if you do, here's what I want you to know, that you're going to read, chapters of all these, kind of like, specific and sometimes odd sounding instructions for God's people. It's chapter after chapter of, odd sounding instructions about, how and where to worship and about tithes and offerings and about farming and about, forgiving debt and releasing slaves and charging interest and when you do and when you don't and celebrating festivals and appointing judges, and there's rules for battle and rules for honoring women and even, like instructions for like how to care for your neighbor's lost pet. Read it. We're going to jump ahead next week, so go check this stuff out. But here's what you have to understand. All of these instructions, okay, that they were not given because God was, like, cruel or old-fashioned or outdated or like obscure. They weren't created. They weren't shared because, God wanted to try to create some, like, weird and cumbersome, system of, hoops for everybody to jump through. No, his one single goal is that he wanted his people to have a distinct witness among all the nations. So he's going, hey, as you make your way into the next land and you're surrounded by the people there, he just wanted them to see, hey, they're going to do it this way. This is how these people operate. We're going to do it a different way. He's going, hey, when you encounter the next group of people that did it one way, we're going to do it differently with the goal that we have a distinct and a distinguishable witness among all of the people. And gang, that's ultimately what God is asking of us too. The book of Romans, in fact, in the New Testament, gives us a similar set of instructions. Right in chapter 12, it says, don't copy the behavior and the customs of this world. Don't just kind of look at how people seem to be doing it around you, to your left and your right, and go, hey, well, I get, you know, I'll just do what they do. I get that. I'm not different than them. I guess this is okay. It says, don't copy the behavior and the customs of this world, but let God transform you into a new person by changing the way that you think, by changing the way that you operate, by changing the way that you live your lives every day in such a way that you might stick out just a little bit, all in an effort to stand up for God. Gang, what we're seeing here is that our goal has to be somehow, some way to live differently. We look back, we love God, and we live differently in a way that people would notice around us. And so here's a question for you to consider this week. Something for you to ask yourself. When the world around you, whether it's, you know, friends, neighbors, coworkers, maybe family members, who, you know, whoever it is, when the world around you looks at your life, you got to ask yourself, what do they see? And does it look differently? Your life every day, does it look different than everything else? Right? Especially for those of you who love God and you've been called according to his purposes. And if you're not there yet, you can still, you know, take some of this stuff for a test run, right? But especially for those of us who love God, we've been called according to his purposes. You got to ask yourself, does your life look any different from the rest of the world around you? Does your marriage look any different? Or is normal just the standard? Because ultimately, right, it's normal for marriages to just, you know, kind of get by and grow stagnant after a while, right? It's been a lot of years. What can you expect? It's just normal, right? Does the way you honor and serve and treat and talk to your spouse, does it look any different? Or are you just using, you know, kind of, you know, normal husband-wife relationships as your standard, right? What can you expect? Right? Does the way that you spend your time, does it look any different to anyone around you? Does your calendar and do your priorities look any different from the world around you and from what's important to them? Does the way you spend and use your money, does it look any different? Or are you just chasing after all of the same things that everyone else chases after? You look at the way that you conduct yourself and, you know, in some of the big conversations that happen today, right? You look at the way you conduct yourself, you know, online and in, you know, kind of social media based conversations. You got to ask yourself, does the way you conduct yourself online look any different from the rest of the world who just fights and finger points and slings mud and insults and accusations from the safety of their own keyboard? Do we look any different in the way that we participate online or in conversations about things that matter in the world today? I sure hope so. Does the way that you forgive others look any different in your life? Or do you just do like everyone else does? It's an eye for an eye. It's a tooth for a tooth. It's grudges and bitterness and resentment. And I'll never get over this. Does the way you honor others at work or at school or wherever, does it look any different? Or you just get sucked into the same conversations, the same, you know, gossip that respectable other people in your life seem to participate in, right? Does the way that you date look any different than the world around you? Gang, the list goes on and on and on about every area of our life, but the question remains the same. Are you and I living differently in a way that would draw attention to a God who has been so good and faithful to us. It's not a question of, are we better than? You know, are we living in our life in such a way that we can kind of hold it over other people to prove that, you know, we've really got it all together? No. That's not the question I'm asking you. The question is, are you and I living differently in a way that people would notice, that they would ultimately draw attention to God and his faithfulness to us? And if the answer is no to any of those questions, and I'm not saying like, failed. No, that's not the point. If the answer is no to any of these questions, then the next question for you to ask yourself is, hey, what would it take? What would it take to start living a little differently in some area of your life that matters? What would it take in your life, in the places where you have influence every day? What would it take to stand out just a little bit more? Gang, at the end of the day, I would love it if that was our reputation as a church. What if we became known as the weird church? Okay, that's maybe not the best marketing strategy, but I could think about rephrasing it maybe, but hopefully you see what I mean. What if this was our reputation? What if our friends and our neighbors and our coworkers, what if our, you know, teachers or kids' teachers, what if the people that we rub shoulders with in different places in the world, in the community, what if they said to themselves, you know what? I don't really know if I believe what those people believe, but my goodness, I like those people. I mean, those people, they come pouring out of that ugly warehouse in the back every Sunday morning. Like, who are those people? I would love it if they're going, man, like, who are they? I would love it if our friends and neighbors and coworkers and people are going, man, I wish I had the marriage that they had. I wish I had the kids that they had. I wish I had the outlook on life that they have. Are they not seeing the same stuff in the world that I'm seeing? Right? I would love for them to be going, man, these people, I don't know if I believe what they believe, but they're the kindest, happiest, most content, most patient, most understanding, most forgiving, most gracious, most encouraging people that I've ever met. What's up with them? And sadly, gang, all that stuff, it's not the norm anymore. And if that's the case, then I would say, well, hey, let's do the opposite. Let's do things differently. Midcurrent, that they say, and you may have heard this as well, they say that life is caught, not taught. And I can't help but think that our witness to the world about how good and how faithful God is, I cannot help but think our witness to the world will be the greatest. Not because of what we say, but because of what we do with our lives every single day. Let me pray. God, we've all got different places in this world where we have influence. God, you've gifted us each uniquely. You've put us in different places in this community, in this world, in unique ways, God, and you've given us influence, the ability to inspire others, the ability to encourage others, God. You've given us an amazing opportunity to be a witness to how good you are. God, you've given us gifts and influence, not for the purpose of drawing attention to ourselves, but ultimately for the purpose of drawing attention to you. And so, God, if we're going to use who we are to point to how great you are, I pray that we would figure out how we stand out just a little bit more. Because, God, I really think that standing out, it's got to be the new standard. If we want to stand up for you, God, if we want to point people to you, if we want to draw attention to you, I think it's going to require us to live our lives just a little bit differently. And so, God, wherever it is for us, God, would you help us to A, see that place in our life where maybe we're just kind of blending in, where maybe we're just fading into the background, where maybe we're just kind of disappearing into the crowds? And would you help us, God, to know how and when and where we do things just a little bit differently. God, would you help us to know how and when and where that we stand up for you by standing out in a way that would point to you with everything that we do. God, we ask for your help in doing that today, in this week, and in the weeks and in the months to come. And we pray these things in the name of your Son, Jesus. Amen.
Thank you for listening to this week's message from Midcurrent Church. For more information and to visit us online, check out midcurrentchurch.org and follow us on Facebook and Instagram. Be sure to join us on Sunday mornings, both online and in person at 9 and 10:30 a.m. Midcurrent is located at 200 First Street in downtown Hudson, Wisconsin.